Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Have you got game? Got game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game, a show by gamers, for gamers, right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Each and every week, we bring you the latest in video game news, reviews, and interviews. This time around, we hop back into the octagon to get you set for UFC Undisputed 3 and look back at Xbox Live's attempt at redemption. We look for value in MLSE's Real Sports app. BioShock Infinite is kicking it old school with what they call 1999 mode. We also talk Resident Evil 6, Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning, EA Grand Slam Tennis 2, and Star Wars The Old Republic.
Have you got game? The Lowdown.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Look who's back.
Here I am.
It's Brian Calhoun.
Yeah.
Christine Chubb. And there's that guy, Momin Qureshi.
Here I am.
I'm Zach Cooper. I think this is probably our second show, the four of us, since just before Halloween.
This is our on Sportsnet 590, The Fan show since before Halloween. We're all together. Because the one we did was podcast only.
Yeah, the holiday
end of
2011
year.
Show was not on the air.
So who brought cupcakes then?
I'm looking Brian's direction.
You can look someplace else.
I want to.
No cupcakes.
All right. Face the wall.
It's so good to be back. All right, so let's get right into it. There's a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of UFC stuff. And I guess we'll play to a theme that we have for the last few weeks, because UFC 142 was live on the Xbox Live app. And without getting into it too much, I mean, it was obviously a fantastic card for those who were following, probably two of the knockouts of the year. But I can speak to the broadcast through the app on Xbox Live. And this time it was flawless. It was a wonderful performance, a wonderful recovery performance at that, from the merger between UFC and Xbox Live, because the first one, which went down on, I guess it was December 30th, it was an absolute disaster, a colossal failure. People couldn't connect. There was lag. There was freezing. There was crashing. And ultimately, those who did get it missed out on a great deal. This time around, you know, I had no issues with the picture quality. It was HD through and through. It was a fantastic card. They still don't have some of the features that they announced that will eventually be rolling out. Those have not arrived yet as far as the social aspects of it. I couldn't figure out how to pick the winners of the fights this time, which was a bit of a disappointment because the leaderboards, as far as my experience went, were not live. But as far as actually enjoying the UFC experience through my Xbox Live, it was there, and you have access to the entire card for 24 hours after the fact as well, which was very cool. So thumbs up, solid recovery, and you know, I still don't understand why someone would necessarily get that over just watching it on TV for the same price, because up here in Canada we have bandwidth restrictions. So there's something to be said for that.
I'll tell you why. What if you don't have a cable box?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
If you don't have a cable box.
Done. I guess you have just answered that question.
There you go.
Now, if you don't have a cable box, are you willing to pay $7 a Leaf game? Because I know that's still not a price I'm going to pay.
Oh, you're already getting into the MLSE app.
Yeah.
Because we've got UFC Undisputed 3 news as well. But if you want, we can go app to app and then bring
it back. App to app.
All right, app to app. So the app for MLSE, it is officially called Real Sports, that has gone live as well. And this one, I mean, I can't really find justification for some of these price points. We actually reached out to MLSE for their thoughts on the pricing, and we'll break that down quickly. So on this application, on your Xbox Live account, basically it's $7 for a Leaf game, $7 for Gold TV monthly for the pass, $7 for NBA TV Canada for a monthly pass, or $15, an all-access pass to Leafs TV, not including the games, NBA TV Canada, and Goal TV. And now, Calhoun, you made this note. When you first launched the app, and I'll admit I haven't checked it out, there's nothing really that speaks to me being a subscriber of Leafs TV, NBA TV Canada, and basically every other sports channel there is at this point going in. I have no use for this app. But when you first launched it, you said you saw single out-of-market soccer and basketball games for $2 a pop. But last time you checked it out, that was no longer the case.
Yeah, I checked it out just the other day, and I did not find those price points anywhere in the app, but I was making notes when I first launched this app, like last week or earlier in the week. I think it launched on Monday or something like that. It launched very early this week. And yeah, I do remember seeing something along those lines. I can't remember exactly what the price was. I believe it was $2, maybe it was $3, but they were selling individual games.
That I can get down with. If I don't have, you know, the super sports packs that have every out-of-market game, and I'm looking at, say, you know, one particular Oklahoma City Thunder game that I want to watch or whatever, maybe I'll fork over $2. But the only thing that I can sort of put in favor of this application is just playing to the idea that you said before with the UFC thing. If you don't have a cable box, then maybe you would do this. But if you don't have a cable box, I'd imagine part of that is due to the cost, and you're not going to be spending $7 to get one Leafs game.
Yeah, seriously. Well, there's no question, sorry, Brian, that Leafs games for MLSE will be their bread and butter with this app. That's right. Where they plan to make most of their bank. But $7 a game is a fairly steep price.
It's a joke.
Yeah, I mean, especially since they're just regular season games. They're not. You
if
know.
It came with a free beer or something, maybe. Because then
I don't know. Aren't beers like the ACC like $15? I don't drink. I don't know. But
that's
I assume
fine.
That
but
is
it, how much, it also that costs much. More than $7 to go to a Leafs game.
Yeah,
but if you're going
true,
to the
too.
Bar, you get a pint for $7.
I mean, I guess if you had some buddies over or whatever, it's fine. But it's still too much to watch for a regular game, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I used to live in Ottawa, because the Senators were there, all of the Leaf games were blacked out. So I guess if I really wanted to watch some Leafs TV or watch a Leafs game, or if one of the bars in the area wanted to promote it, I guess they could do it that way. But still, I'm not paying $7 to watch Leafs games.
Maybe this is something that goes to people who are outside of the province, I guess, who might not get every Leafs game. But I think, you know,
well,
most games are available on a Sportsnet or another network that will provide
or nationally
these.
On CBC
well, exactly,
or something like that.
If you're talking
like
about Saturdays, yeah.
That's such a limited market, though, to just be like, yes, we'll market this whole thing for these people who are far away.
But are they offering $7 for every Leaf game, even ones that aren't on Leafs TV?
No, it's per Leaf game.
No, but I'm saying, are they offering it for ones that are on, say, Sportsnet or on CBC?
And,
or is it just for ones that specifically would air on Leafs TV?
And to be honest, I don't think any current Leaf games air on Leaf TV.
Yeah, they do.
No, they are. There are a few specifically Leaf TV only.
There are a few.
I think
there aren't
a handful
many.
A season.
Yeah, there aren't that many, but there are a few that are only on Leafs TV.
Can anyone find anything in favor of this app? Why someone would?
I did find a couple of things. Now, I'm surprised that you were so against the NBA TV Canada $6 or $7 a month pass, because it seems like all the games now are going to be part of that package. You get NBA TV. It looks
if
like you
have
all
a Rogers
games.
Box, you can get that channel for $2 a month.
I'm just saying, if you don't have a Rogers box,
or you
box,
can spend more than that's fine. But if you don't have a, I mean, get a Rogers box.
Yeah.
If we're adding up these kind of prices, it makes more sense to get a Rogers box, even if it's for the sole purpose of just getting one of those channels. Because you're talking about $15 a month when the entire sports pack for, and this is not me trying to sell Rogers channels. This is me completely flabbergasted by the usefulness of this MLSE app. And I'll remind you that Rogers is a part owner now of MLSE.
Way Rogers is getting the money.
It's not all about, you know, blowing the company's horn or anything, but
yeah.
The entire sports theme pack is $10.14 according to Rogers.com, and that's per month. So.
Look, I'm all about giving listeners or users as much choice as possible, but Leaf fans are notorious for spending money when you don't think they'd spend money. I mean, how often in this, and I'm a Leaf fan, so
is
I
that because management
have we supported,
won't? Is that,
no,
is
but
that
I
what
mean,
the joke was?
How often have we've supported a loser for 40 years, right? I mean, in this city. And more times than not, they've been terrible during those years. So Leaf fans are notorious for spending money on crappy
that.
Products.
I hate that identification where if they're not winning a Stanley Cup, they're automatically a loser.
No.
I understand the no play. We don't need to get into this debate.
No, but I'm saying is for the majority of those 40 years, they have been a terrible team, though. Not just a non-playoff team or a playoff team.
You can't say the majority of the 40 years they've been a terrible team.
If you do the math, I guarantee you more than 20 of those years they were a terrible team, which would make it the majority. Unless we become a sports show as opposed to a game show.
You guys are splitting hairs here. Come on, let's focus back on
this. I want to find out from our listeners if anyone has found justification for this, if anyone has ordered anything on this app, to send us an email, gotgame@fan590.com, or hit us up on Twitter, @gotgame590, because I want to hear from you, because I can't understand.
There's one other thing that I wasn't able to get to, and they do have a large selection of interesting videos. They interview some players and coaches, put that up there. But so far, my favorite thing I found on this app is that they'll have a 6-minute recap of every game the next day.
Which you can find on MapleLeafs.com.
If I went to MapleLeafs.com.
If you've got the internet, I mean, granted, you would have to have the internet for that, so I understand.
Well, if you have an Xbox 360.
That was kind of my joke there.
But what if I just wanted to watch all that beautiful hockey action on my television instead of my 19-inch screen.
If you have an Xbox 360, you should be able to.
Yeah, I can. I thought that was a beautiful thing.
No, he's playing to a point for that. I understand. I don't know. I've got a computer with a decent monitor. I've got... I don't know. I'm at a point where I've got a lot of electronics.
I got a laptop and I got a 30-inch television screen. It was nicer to watch the 6-minute recap on that television screen. That's all I'm saying.
How much would you pay?
I wouldn't.
No, but if what's a price point you'd be willing to pay per Leaf game?
$1.
I'd go as far as $2.
Yeah,
I'd say $2
maximum. There's no chance
I'd
of paying anymore.
Well, yeah, how many games are there in a season? And then rationalize
it. You got 82, and
so that's $82 for an entire Leaf season if you're going to watch it. That's a lot.
I don't know if that's a lot for the entire... If you can get... whatever. We can move past. I want to get back to the Octagon and talk about some of the stuff from UFC Undisputed 3 that they've announced, and a lot of it pertains to the career mode. We can tell you that the demo will be out on the 24th, so this upcoming Tuesday. I believe it's Tuesday. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
So the game itself, UFC Undisputed 3, will be coming out February 14th. If you haven't already, I believe this weekend is your last opportunity to go to the Facebook page and click like on the UFC Undisputed 3 page, and you will get free access to Alistair Overeem, who was on the 141 card, and he basically forced Brock Lesnar to retire. Big fighter, key for the game as well, but he is not in it. Out of the box. So that's something to keep in mind. But as far as his career mode, it's actually pretty cool, and it seems like they've fleshed it out a lot. They've got three circuits in a path that basically you can dictate as you go. You start in the WFA, which is the World Fighting Alliance, and then you can graduate to the UFC. You can stay in WFA. You can get invites to Pride. It all depends on how well you're doing in your career. And it seems really cool. Once a year in your career, you will get an invite to Pride fighting, and you can build on your legacy from that standpoint. There's no longer any stat degradation or what THQ calls micromanaging your fighter, and there's simply more emphasis on the fighting itself with six real camps in which you can train, which I think is fantastic. It's adding to the realism. I think it's bringing UFC fans into the game a little bit more so. If they're a fan of a particular camp, then that's probably who they're going to go with, and you can train in different aspects and strengthen different fighting styles. The training is more prevalent to teaching you how to play the game as well, as opposed to just adjusting your stats to modify that way. As you may or may not know, the submission mechanics have been reworked with basically a mini game, which is kind of like cat chasing a mouse, if you will. You basically need to keep this dot inside a bar that shrinks as you continue to do the submission. And from the looks of it, at least in some of the modes, there is something that resembles a power bar, which will be an outline, a silhouette of your body, and it shows which parts of your body have been basically hammered and are on the verge of, destruction, and would be easier to submit you through. So that's just a heads up for that. Again, it's a Valentine's Day launch, and the demo will be out on Tuesday. But
I love you like UFC.
It's true, and it looks really good. I mean, I was kind of hesitant when we played it at X11, and it felt very similar to UFC Undisputed 2010, I guess is what it was. But now I know, based on what we saw on those builds and what we're able to see now, the animations are a little bit smoother, and it looks like the ground game has been expanded on to the point where it's not necessarily inaccessible, but it is for the hardcore fans, and you will need to get through the learning curve to be able to master the ground game, which I think also speaks to the idea of training in MMA, where you're not going to do anything in the Octagon unless you train hard. So I think that's pretty cool, and I'm excited. Anyone want to shed any light on their thoughts in UFC Undisputed 3?
Not just that, from some talk I've been having with some people over the last couple months, I feel like there's a little bit more excitement about this year's version compared to previous years.
You take an extra year, you refine a little bit more. I think that goes to the quality control, and they pushed this game back. I think it was supposed to be out already, if I'm not mistaken, but they pushed it back about a month and change to make sure that they get everything right.
I also feel like UFC is more popular right now than it was a year or two ago.
It's probably the fastest growing entity in sports. I can't think of anything that has got such a wild fan base that continues to grow exponentially.
Mini golf, but
other than mini golf, I mean that was just assumed. Yeah. I think mini golf is always the exception.
I pay $7 a game for that.
Christine called it a game. Oh, you're talking about mini game. Never mind, mini putt. She called UFC like the fighting aspect, like in real life, she called it a game.
I asked if he watched the game, and he's like, "What game?"
And she was like, "UFC." I was like, "It's not a game."
Did you call it? Were you like, "Are people called it a sport?" Did you watch the sports game?
The sports game, yeah, yeah. A little bit.
Who's winning the match, which really only applies in tennis. So heads up to those who have NBA Jam on Fire edition, like myself. If you're someone who actively plays it, unlike myself, know that EA Sports is thinking of you, despite the fact that they are not really showing it. EA Sports has announced that they will be eventually putting out the roster patch to update the rosters, which is something that they promised before the game came out. For those who are unfamiliar, it's a downloadable title. I think it was $15 if it wasn't $10. And basically, they promised before launch that they would keep the rosters up to date. There was concern with the lockout that there wouldn't be a season at all. But now we've had games since Boxing Day, since Christmas Day, actually. And nothing's changed. I think the one thing that people would like is for the Clippers to have Chris Paul. And that's a glaring miss. But Lob City will be yours to play, in the very near future. We don't have a firm date yet, but EA Sports says it's on the horizon. In just a matter of moments, we are going to switch things up. We're going to talk about, an interesting mode that will be included in BioShock Infinite. Speaking of no firm date yet, no doubt one of the most anticipated titles of 2012. We'll talk about BioShock Infinite. We'll talk about a couple of the demos that have recently been released. EA Grand Slam Tennis 2 would be one of them. Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning would be another. So a little bit more RPG-ish to feast on. Plenty more news to come when we continue here on Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We've got game. Do you? In the game.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Zach Cooper. There's Momin Qureshi. Oh, hi, Brian Calhoun. And what's up, Chubb? That is Christine. I should probably turn her mic on.
That would be helpful.
We'll get a little yo-yo. Yeah, there it is. All right, so lots to talk about. We'll get to the BioShock Infinite stuff in a bit, but we also did have the opportunity to try out a game called Never Dead. I'm not, you know, if you haven't heard of this game, it wouldn't entirely shock me. It is put out by Konami. It kind of flew under the radar a bit. They didn't have an entity at E3 about it. But just before E3, they showed us off what Never Dead was all about. And the premise is it's got something to do with a guy, the protagonist, the character whom you play as. He has been cursed with immortality. And basically what happens is it's a third-person shooter action game that involves an extensive amount of limb severing and decapitation, but being that you are immortal, this does not end your "quote unquote" life.
But as you discovered many times, Zach, you actually can fail the game when your head gets sucked in by this little beach ball like monster
with spikes. It's a beach ball with spikes.
Okay, yeah. And you're apparently digested forever and ever and ever. That's how the fail state of this game goes. And it actually happened quite a lot. I thought for a game that really had no way for the guy you're playing with to die, you did find a way to die quite a lot, Zach, so I'm quite impressed by your skills.
Oh, thank you very
much. You're welcome.
As we watched you for an hour try and manipulate these relatively easy puzzles. But we don't need to get into that. I mean, that's
fine. It makes me sad that I wasn't there.
Yeah, no, we missed you very much so. But basically, a lot of hilarity ensued from watching this game because you're fighting. You've got dual pistols, and then you got a huge-ass sword, and you can unlock different, upgrades to your combat system, including blowing up your head and dismembering yourself voluntarily, because that somehow gives you an advantage. I couldn't quite pick that up. But basically,
there's one time where it would have been useful to me, but I had not unlocked at that point. Where
I remember that time.
Throughout the game, you are collecting these little red shards or something.
They're experience points,
and there was just one in this basketball hoop. The game, if you unlock it, has the ability to, like you said, rip your head off and throw it. If I could have done that, my head could have collected that shard through the basketball hoop, it would have been nothing but net.
I think nice. It was one of those games where you're dealing with all these weird creatures, one of which they call a spoon, and it's this character that has this rounded blade for a head that kind of looks like an ostrich with a blade head. There's the boss.
I think it had like four legs.
The boss, that's so strange. The boss has a name that is Sword Pig. And the script is kind of
it's very humorous. Japanese.
It's very Japanese, and it's very pun heavy. There's a lot of repetition. Again, this wasn't the final build that we were playing. The game comes out in a couple of weeks. But, you know, you're in these combat scenarios, and then all of a sudden you find yourself without an arm and without the opposite leg, and you're hopping around,
trying to
shoot. And there was a lot of laughter, and I'd imagine that it was, you know, quasi-intentional. I don't know if it's supposed to be that much funny as it is combat-altering, but I think it was supposed to be funny. I hope so.
Really? I got the impression that we were having fun with the game, but we were having fun on our terms, not the way that the developers were planning us to have fun.
I don't think they... Well, I would hope that they're not taking themselves too seriously with the development of this game based on the script and the idea where you need to go to these electrical outlets, electrocute yourself, so you're just rolling around as your head to get into these platforming segments of the game, which were actually a lot of fun.
Yeah. I don't know. That could be true. It may not be true. All I can say for sure is that there's nothing greater in that game than being able to take that sword, swing it at like 5 propane tanks, blow yourself and everything up in the room and just have huge fireballs exploding, and then boom, you're just ahead. I laughed at that every time. It did not get old.
I wasn't there when you guys played this, but this game sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was
pretty good. We'll find out when we review it in a couple weeks.
It has ups and downs, though. A few of the downs, though, were repetitive gameplay, at least gameplay design.
Repetitive puns.
A lot of repetitive puns. That really got annoying really fast. But a lot of the gameplay, well, it does look interesting because there's a lot of variety in the environment and the character designs are really cool. For the majority of the gameplay, we were trying to hunt these little pod-like things that kept spawning different bad guys. There was like 3 types of bad guys that was spawning over and over and over again. So it was just a series of go find this thing, blow it up. Okay, you did that. You can move on to the next room where you find the exact same thing and blow it up there. It's pros and cons for the game now.
We'll see how it goes when it comes out. We'll review it when we get that opportunity. In the meantime, let's talk about a demo that just came out this past week. Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, Kurt Schilling's game. And basically it came out, I don't know if it's coming out at a tough time. What would you say? Skyrim was a little while ago, but a lot of people are still playing it. It's also a big open world RPG, a lot more colorful, a lot more focused on the combat, and open world as far as your growth as a character as well. What were some of your impressions of the demo?
Well, I really liked it. I thought it looked a lot more like Fable than I thought it was going to, with these really beautiful colors, and it has kind of this misty look about it, which is very fantasy. I liked the character building. The combat stood out fantastically. Like, this was no offense to Skyrim, but the combat in this was much better because it was actually like you were attacking people and you could feel it happening. The characters seem very likable. It seems like a fun game. When I saw the map, I was surprised at how big this game is actually going to be. And since Skyrim has been out for a while, I think a lot of people are coming close to ending that part of the game and, you know, just looking for something a little bit different. I don't know if it's going to take up as much time as, say, Skyrim did.
They're hoping it will.
Well, yeah. But right now, I mean, it's coming out in the start of February. I think it's a good time for it because, you know, it gives you a little bit of time to play it before other things come out and just kind of explore the world.
February is a pretty heavy month. And this game is also going to require a fair amount of heavy gaming.
If you're an RPG fan, like there's really, I can't think of a lot that's out there for you at that time.
It does come out February 7th. Basically, I mean, the opportunity to get the demo is, I think, rare for most RPGs. Mm-hmm. What happens is it gives you a good chunk of the story to start, and then once you get to a certain point, it will give you 45 minutes to do whatever you can in that time, not including the conversation with NPCs. It's a lot of conversation like you would expect. Yeah. It's a third-person perspective, and there are a lot of skills to unlock as you go. I didn't think there was too much that was new as far as the combat tree or the skill tree, if you will. And as far as how the character progression is involved, we'll find out a little bit more as we spend a little bit more time with this game. But what they have is basically fate cards and destiny, and you're supposed to sort of just, you know, craft your own as you go along. And, you know, it's interesting. It's definitely worth checking out if you are an RPG head. I'm not entirely sold, but we will be featuring more content next week with our chat with the developers. But alas, we do need to move on. Quickly, Grand Slam Tennis 2 thoughts?
Fun. Like, I thought it worked really well. I liked the little bit that they showed us. I liked the ability to rock around the court, the whole characterization. I thought it looked really good. I'm excited to see what it comes.
The one thing on the Wii, when they put out the initial EA Grand Slam Tennis, a game that I love, it was very much cartoony due to the graphical limitations of the Wii. When you've got it on these HD consoles, there is by no means any sort of cartooning. It is legit. It looks real. It feels fantastic with all the power and flow and spin that you can incorporate as well. And I very much look forward to getting my hands on this game when it comes out right around the corner. BioShock Infinite is probably one of the more anticipated, if not the most anticipated game of 2012. An interesting mode that Irrational Games has unveiled. It's called 1999 mode, and it's basically a tribute to the games that were more difficult, and they don't give you unlimited lives. There's a game over screen that comes in, and you know, for those who are familiar with the franchise, it doesn't necessarily hold your hand as you get through it. You know, confrontations with big daddies or big sisters, as it were, in the second game, you know, they can be some challenging encounters. And Ken Levine, who is Irrational's creative director, he basically announced that BioShock Infinite will have a mode that ensures your decisions count. There's a sense of permanence that comes with it, where the powers you choose and the actions you make will last for the rest of your gaming experience through this. Now, we're not sure how this will be unlocked, if it needs to be unlocked, if you need to finish it on hardcore, for example, but I love the idea that they're putting this in there, and I think it's different from what we see in most games of today. Another game that sort of jumped out there as far as, you know, a great promotional campaign that they had where, you know, they were saying, they had signs saying no hope left, and there were pictures taken around the world, and no one was really sure what it was all about until the other day when the trailer came out for what we now know as Resident Evil 6. The trailer is fantastic. I tweeted it. We'll have it up. Actually, I don't even know if we can put it on the blog because of the age gate, but if we can, we'll put it up there on the God Game blog on sportsnet590.ca. Some quick thoughts on what we saw from the trailer.
Hey, it looks like more Resident Evil, but they've upgraded the combat systems to involve sliding to cover, stuff like that. I didn't play Resident Evil 5. I played 4, but I didn't play 5, so I'm not totally sure exactly what was in that game, but it does look like they have updated that combat system slightly while still keeping the tank controls that have been in there since the beginning.
Chris Redfield's in it, Leon Kennedy's in it, and a new character will be introduced into the series as well. You can play as all of them. They will intermingle, but you get to choose who you start with, and the experience is supposedly going to be changing depending on who you pick and how you play with them. It's very cool. 3DS demos, they are finally a thing.
Yeah, actually, there are going to be demos for a number of 3DS games coming across the 3DS eShop from now on. Actually, ironically, the very first one was Resident Evil Revelations, and on Thursday, I somehow became interested in two Resident Evil games all at once because of the trailer and the demo, which for some reason, though, you can download the demo and they have a hard limit of 30 times you can play it, and that's it, which seems like an odd choice for numbers. I guess that's kind
of a lot to me.
That's a really high number.
I rarely play a demo more than twice.
Yeah.
I just want a taste, and if I like it, I'll explore the full thing. Free demo versions of Mario and Sonic at the London 2012 Olympic Games will be launching on the 26th, just so you know.
That's more anticipated than BioShock, by the way.
Totally. It's on the list. What can we say? Yeah. Thumbsticks to the 3DS, often tied to Kid Icarus. Anyone want to talk about this?
Yeah, this is a bad idea. They're going to charge $20 for the thumbstick, so I think I may buy one because I am now interested in Resident Evil Revelations.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea then if you're going to buy it. terrible.
But I believe that's the only game I'm going to get any use out of because, traditionally speaking, technological re-envisionings of hardware during a product's life cycle normally leads to sort of a splitting of the market. There's going to be a lot of development companies that probably will not put in the extra money to develed controls for this.
Yeah, but how about fans of shooters who want that? I mean, this is what you were calling about for the PSP Go or the PSP, whatever, the original ones, the 3000. You were calling for that second thumbstick. Now that they're bringing it to the 3DS, you're saying it's a bad idea, but you're going to buy it anyways?
I say it's a bad idea because it wasn't there from day one, because it isn't incorporated in the hardware, because you can't guarantee...
Well, it's
you
fixing
can't guarantee
a flaw.
That a lot of people are going to buy it, regardless of what flaw is going to fix, because there are probably going to be a lot of people who just want to play Pushmo. Or maybe
what are
Legend
the production
Zelda?
Costs of a second thumbstick?
But you
very
can't
little.
Guarantee they won't either, though.
I can't guarantee they won't, but historically speaking, these sort of revisions haven't done well and always divide the market. So because the market's so divided, a lot of companies don't see the purpose in actually putting in development.
We will remain divided on this, whether you choose to get it or not as a listener. Good luck to you. Calhoun thinks it's horrible, but
Calhoun
he's going to be but on the other side, we're going to talk some Star Wars stuff. The Star Wars MMO, The Old Republic, will get a review for you in just a matter of moments. This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Zach Cooper. That's Momin Qureshi. We've got Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb, as you know, if you have been listening to the program. What we're going to do right now is get into a review. It's a big game that's been out there for, I guess, about a month now, and it is the Star Wars MMO. It is called The Old Republic, and we check in right now with Justin Amricotti, who is a freelance gaming journalist. You've heard him on the show before, and Justin, let's get right into it. I mean, this is a game that's had some ups and downs, and now I guess things have started to iron themselves out. What are your thoughts on the quality of the game and where it is right now?
I'm digging it a lot. I've been off and on with various MMOs throughout the years, and there's just something about Star Wars that's kind of sticking with me. And I really like it. I think it's a really great game for first-time MMO players, especially, because it's got this very sort of BioWare single-player feel to it. But, it's got a lot of still, like, really classic MMO elements, like the guilds and the social world stuff, that make it a lot of fun.
A lot of people, you know, when they're talking about MMOs, whether they be new or veterans of the of the genre, I guess, you know, combat is a big part of these games, but they're not necessarily the focal point. So how does the combat system work, and how do you think that would translate to the expectations of a newbie?
Well, it's not so much like if you're expecting a typical hack and slash running gun sort of feel, you're not going to get that. It's more like a casual MMO where it's a little bit slower paced. You're setting up and queuing actions and then watching them play out like a regular MMO. If anybody's played Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, it's kind of similar to that, but a little bit more fast paced. The combat, however, is very different from like traditional fantasy MMOs because there's a lot more. It feels different because there's blasters and there's lightsabers and there's all these crazy weapons going on. So there'll be times where you have to find cover, or if you're one of the smuggler or bounty hunter classes, you can dive behind rocks and shoot from there, which I've never really seen any other MMO take advantage of terrain as well. As the Jedi, you can use your force powers and that kind of thing, which work a lot like magic spells, but who doesn't like using the force?
Justin, you know, I'm a big Star Wars fan. I love the series, but this game is supposed to take place a long time before any of the other stuff that we've seen. I think it's like 3,000 or 3,500 years or something like that. So what's that like when you go into the game mode? I mean, how different is it?
So I agree that it's not exactly what I want from a Star Wars game. Like, you know, I want Luke and Leia and Han and Chewie. And Vader, right? That's what I want out of my Star Wars game. But because this is set so far back, you know, all that is like completely out of the picture. However, it still feels very much like a Star Wars game. They still kept it very grounded in the universe. There are some oddities, like seeing, you know, because of the time frame of the game, the universe, you know, you're seeing tons of Jedi just running around like crazy, which is the norm for it. But it doesn't have the classic Star Wars feel. But it doesn't feel like it's misplaced from what you remember of the series.
And you can't be Harrison Ford, correct?
Correct.
Oh, that's very disappointing.
That's such a shame.
We are talking about Star Wars The Old Republic with Justin Amricotti. I know, Calhoun, you wanted to jump in as well before Momin stepped on your
chair. Yeah, because Justin started talking about something that actually I've heard a lot of people talk about, and they sort of refer to this as a MMO you can play by yourself, which kind of seems like contradictory terms. Justin, can you sort of go into depth about how this is a game, despite being an MMO, that you can play by yourself?
Right. So, in my experience with MMOs, you know, there comes a point where you have to stop soloing. You can't go and finish this quest on your own. It reaches a point where you can't do any more by yourself. You need to go out. You need to find people. You need to group up.
Is that because of difficulty or actual roadblocks?
Not actual roadblocks, but it becomes impossible. Like, without, you know, the rogue to, you know, sneak behind and deal the stealth damage to this character, or the healer, you're never going to get past this certain spot. You have to work together. That's the core of what makes them most fun. With Star Wars, however, I found that they gave all of the characters opportunities to play all of the roles almost. So, like, my main character was a smuggler, and I was able to heal myself and boost myself and still deal damage and still stealth kind of, and it was just like this weird melange of attributes where I didn't really have to rely on anybody. The only time I would find myself partying up is if I was in an area that was a little overpopulated, and it would just be faster to complete a quest if we worked together. The same goes for the dialogue choices. Because it's so dialogue and story-driven, it's largely pushed forward through the single-player sort of aspect of it. Like, you're making choices based on your character, and it doesn't really affect your party. So they didn't really do too much to add the massive or multiplayer part to the existing Star Wars games that they've made.
So how does that work then? If you are in a party, you've got a group with you, a party of however many people, and I guess you've been elected as the person to speak to said NPC to move the story along, or maybe everyone gets the opportunity, but how does your choice not affect what happens for the rest of the people?
Right, so it's instanced for each player. So the actual conversations that take place, it's isolated. It's almost like your party members aren't there. Sometimes they have these group scenes where it kind of passes the choice making around, but for the majority of it, they're very instanced, where it's like I'm having a conversation with this guy and they're having a conversation with this guy, and it really doesn't interact with each other. And I've seen situations where I've wound up getting the quest, they haven't got the quest, and then I just transfer them the quest to the transitive property of parties.
Now, does that allow you to co-mingle with, say, the dark side people if you're a Jedi?
No, they're definitely factioned, like the Horde and the Alliance, and WoW, you can't really cross-pollinate.
So then, how does that work if there is some sort of battle between, you know, parties on the dark side, parties on the Jedi, and then, you know, what happens when you die? Does all your stuff get scattered? Are you able to regenerate with all your stuff just in a different part of the makeshift town? How does that work? And also, I want to get into some skill tree stuff.
Right. So there's two options. You can call a medical droid, and then it'll come and revive you right where you are.
Okay, so just like in real life. All right, cool.
And then the other option is you respawn at your hometown, and you got, like, damage done to you and stuff like that, and you got to wait a while to reheal.
All right, so lastly, then, before we let you go, leveling up skill trees, how does that all work?
So I think each of the classes has three. I haven't played all the classes, so each of the classes has three skill trees to choose from. You pick through your abilities, and if you're a Jedi, that can be everything from, like, destructive powers like Force Lightning. If you're a smuggler, that can be, you know, trick shots with your gun or various other sort of explosives. There's a whole bunch of different stuff, and it's very routine. If you've played any, you know, RPG in the last, you know, 10 years, you're familiar with the system. It's nothing too confusing. They take all the stat modification out of your hands, so it's not like something like Diablo where you would have to choose, oh, I want to put extra points into health or dexterity. Mm-hmm. It just does it all for you automatically, like most MMOs.
Okay, and so to wrap it up, I mean, the quality of the game as a whole, and how you think Star Wars fans would feel about it?
I think Star Wars fans are going to be pretty happy with the game. I think long-term MMO fans might find it a little lacking in the social element. However, it's been so long since we've had something this well polished that it's worth checking out anyway, even if it's not exactly up your alley. I think this is the perfect game for newcomers, though. If you've ever thought about getting into an MMO and you've wanted to try it, but you've always been a little afraid to, or it's seemed a little daunting, this is the one to try.
All right, and give us a score out of 10 if you could.
I'm going to give it a solid 8.
An 8 out of 10 for Star Wars The Old Republic. Thanks for doing this, Justin. That was Justin Amercotti, a freelance gaming journalist who you have heard on Got Game in the past, and well, he gave the Star Wars MMO The Old Republic an 8 out of 10, as you heard. So Star Wars fans, obviously something to work with there, but you know, it definitely sounded like there was a bit of a conundrum, because it's not necessarily, you know, something that a lot of old-school MMO fans will really speak to, because it seems to involve a fair amount of hand-holding.
But that sort of single-player sort of aspect, at least from his description, sound like the way they are going with more of a single player focus, with, you know, you and your little computer partner, that may attract people who normally would not get into an MMO because maybe they just don't want to deal with other people.
I find it, you know, especially because there are a lot of those principles that lend to more single-playing aspects of this game, I think that makes it even a little bit more difficult to justify the $15 a month subscription service. I mean, if this is a game that really allows you to do the majority of it by yourself, you know, the whole idea is you're paying this big fee to help upkeep these servers. But if everyone can sort of just do their own thing, then I don't know. I mean, I'm not a fan of subscriptions in the first place, especially when you get to that kind of price point. And I'm not an MMO guy, so I'm not the best person to talk to about this either. And I'm not a Star Wars guy either. So basically, that's the three strikes for me in this game. But liked it.
I think that $15 is pretty steep, and I am a Star Wars guy, but I'm not an MMO guy. Mm-hmm. What I find interesting, though, is that they chose to set this basically thousands of years before any of the other Star Wars stuff that we've ever seen or know. But from what I've seen from this game, it looks relatively like the Star Wars that we've seen and know.
That's just what they do to get away from the characters, you know.
I'm fine with that. It's just look-wise, they still seem to have relatively the same technology that they had 3,000 years later. I'm like, wow, did they make no leaps forward in that universe?
None.
And I don't know, maybe there is some appeal here, because if I was to actually think of this in a different way, let's say this was like a Mass Effect MMO. You know, same sort of idea, same sort of single player, almost focus, even though it's an MMO, you group up with other people. I may be a little bit more interested in it because I could think of it as, hey, I like playing a lot of Mass Effect. What if there was a system where they would give me a lot of Mass Effect all at once and even more Mass Effect down the line, because I'm sure like every other MMO, they will continue to build more content afterwards. And I just pay them $15 a month instead of dropping, like, say, $70. You know, for 8 hours of content, I'll just pay them $15 and get a little bit of content, you know, here, there, for a longer period of time. That's maybe a business model that I might be interested in.
The thing is, the Star Wars universe itself, though, does lend very much to an MMO atmosphere. Like, if ever I thought of an existing fictional universe that could very much adapt itself to an MMO, Star Wars is it, because I could see needing a bunch of Jedi or Sith to get through certain battles and certain levels.
And that's the thing, too, is that this is a franchise that has not only a huge following, but they have lots of books out, so not only what George Lucas has created, but what lots of fans have created, so really the possibilities are endless. However, I'm still not going to pay $15 for it.
Me neither.
And a lot of people seem to be going that way, because EA's stock recently dipped a little bit because of their fears of like not a lot of people be into playing an MMO, even though they put all this money to get Star Wars into it.
Star Wars is an interesting franchise, and you talk about that fan base that's been obviously around for decades, and they love the new content, but they seem to just bash everything that comes out, which is, you know.
Well, I was driving into work a couple of days ago, and I saw the poster for Star Wars Episode 1 being re-released in theaters in 3D. Mm. I love Star Wars. I was like, dear God, no.
Episode 1
is
horrible.
Which version is it? Is it one of the 17 versions that came out with digitally remastered and character CGI?
If it was the original 3, any version of the original 3, I would be at the theater first in line. But the new
Phantom Menace.
God, no. God,
that,
no.
That was the one that I watched in Italy, and I enjoyed it better than when I watched it here. we got to run, though. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all the emails, the tweets, everything of the sort. You can find us on Twitter at GotGame590. The email address is gotgame@fan590.com. And we always appreciate any conversation, the back and forth. We love it. For Moman Qureshi, Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, I'm Zach Cooper. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.